Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, welcome back to Sacks and Giants. Now, tomorrow's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures up 12 and a quarter. Dow futures up 160. NASDAQ futures up 31. We're making another attempt at a rally again today, which we again, were down when we came in yesterday morning and just finished up. Markets back into the buy the dip mode. Doesn't seem like the fear has gone. We got the Fed whipped back into shape and we're okay here. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. It's Friday. What could be wrong?
The market's up. I tell you what, if these guys in Washington are not trading on this guy's going to China, we're not going to China. If they're not trading on this news, there's something really wrong with these guys, and I don't think these guys are all know where their dollars are, came from. This is the most amazing market moves caused by individual little. This China thing has got to be worth, I don't know how many spook points to people in the administration. I mean, if they're paying attention. I'm not accusing them of anything, I'm just saying. They're doing stuff that's moving the market on damn near a daily basis. And
when are we going to get our stocks and jocks guy in the administration?
That's a good question. Well, I'm not liberal enough for liberal radio, but obviously I'm not conservative enough to be in the White House. So where the hell does that put me? Nowhere.
Puts you here.
Puts me here.
So you're out.
Yeah, it puts me here with you guys, which is fine. For me, but
I'm pretty much out.
So Frank wants
to
know
who we're going to send. Yeah. Who's on after I leave today?
Maybe Wayne.
No one yet.
Yeah, well, they ain't taking Wayne either.
No, they're not taking Wayne. Now next week we're off on Monday.
That's not going to happen.
No, so Frank wants to know what's going to happen next week to the show.
Where's Hal when we need him? Huh?
Yeah, Hal could be the most conservative of the bunch.
Well, yeah, but the White House needs a libertarian voice.
Yeah, that's the mantra that these guys all ran on, less government and everything, right? But Hal actually believes it.
Not exactly, but close. Yeah, they've been certainly less regulation, and they actually, we've had this argument, so I don't even want to.
No, they've done,
but they're doing it.
I think they are. And I will say this, and you're not supposed to be honest. Kevin, if you had an agenda, you're just supposed to tell your side. I will say that yesterday I misspoke. Actually, Wednesday when you were on, I misspoke. I said that Trump had not done anything for our industry. In fact, he has. He got rid of that ridiculous fiduciary rule that was coming out of the Department of Labor. So that has been a big help to people that have commissioned business.
So you got one. Okay.
I got one. Yes, we definitely did get one.
It's all been worth it for you, Tom.
That whole concept of the fiduciary rule, it's one of those things that drives in there with the Homeland Security bill, right? How can you vote against Homeland Security? Do you want your mother raped by some guy with a rag in his head, for God's sake? I mean, how can you vote against it? How can you argue against somebody having a fiduciary responsibility to somebody whose money they're managing?
How can you vote against No Child Left Behind?
Yeah.
You want to leave children behind?
Yeah, you want to leave children behind? What's the matter with you?
How can you vote against the Patriot Act? Are you unpatriotic?
Right. Yeah, are you not a patriot? You're not supposed to read it. You're supposed to vote on it, right? When you do things like that, the whole purpose is to run stuff by your people, and it's somewhat easy to do. But the couple times I had to explain the Fiduciary Act to a couple people, They were so for it, Kevin. It wasn't an act, by the way. It was a rule that came out of the Department of Labor. But the logic of it was so ridiculous. Basically said that in my business, if I manage money on a commission basis, then I only get paid when I do a trade, okay? Forget the part that I might have a program that we've all agreed on that has a trade per month or a trade every 2 months or one trade a year that we agreed on, and we obviously just do the program. That's too much to my advantage. What I need to do is charge you just to manage the portfolio, in which case my incentive is to do nothing rather than do something. I don't know which is worse or which is better, depending on the individual. But if you follow it to its logical conclusion, if you have a flat tire or one that's pretty flat, and you pull into the tire guy, and he says you need a new tire. That guy can't sell you the tire because it's in his advantage to sell you a new tire, even if maybe they could just fill the damn thing back up. Now, which you probably can't because obviously the air got out somehow. So the idea would be he would essentially write you, for lack of a better term, a prescription to go to the next tire guy, and you walk in and just say, I need a tire. And so your dentist, if he sees you have a bad tooth, he can't fill it. He's got to send you somewhere else to fill it because if he fills it and diagnoses it, it's his advantage. His advantage or his inclination is to tell you you need a filling when you don't.
And, of course, you know, it all starts with the assumption that people operate with bad intent.
Right, that everybody's a crook. Now, clearly...
Which is really not much of an outlook on life. I know there are a lot of crooks out there in the world and people who will take advantage of you, and you have to be diligent on your own, but what a dour outlook on life.
But
and honestly, I'm you know, shifting gears, anybody who kind of gets into that Saul Alinsky mode, if you've ever read Rules for Radicals, you know, the early chapters are all with that outlook. It's just such a a dystopian outlook on things that I just can't imagine anybody wanting to live like that. I'd probably just end it all right there.
Well, there are definitely, that's why when people, you know, when I go off against somebody like Elizabeth Warren, and you know, a lot of people who have listened forever say, Chief, you know, why are you like that? Why are you saying, you know, the lady's shrill and why don't you like her and so forth? There's really, and maybe I have made myself totally clear, and I think you'll understand this, Kevin, is that when it comes to regulation and companies being crooks and selling bad stuff and everything, nobody wants that to happen. But there's two different ways of looking at it. One is that if companies are, quote, competitive, and there is a news media, and there is stuff. It's not like people won't make mistakes. You know, there won't be some, whatever, something in your lettuce once in a great while. But the point being is that they're killing people. Airplanes falling out of the sky is really bad business. It's not. Airplanes don't want their airplane to make it to the next town because government is watching them. They do because you wouldn't be much of an airline if you didn't get there half the time. Right.
I mean, that would be a problem. And the other thing is, even if you didn't care one bit about the human consequences, those planes are expensive to replace.
Well, plus you're going to be sued by everybody. I mean, it's not. But even you have instances in this country where people made stuff like toasters and people made stuff like electrical extension cords and things like that. And they wanted to let people know back in the 50s when people were a little more worried about electrical fires and things like that as they are now, for a lot of good reason. They were willing to pay somebody like Underwriters Labs to say, look, I've got my electrical extension cord ran by these guys, and they say this one's safe. And there were years when I was a kid that if, you know, your mother sent you out to buy an extension cord, the first thing she said was make sure it has a UL tag on it. I mean, mine always told me that. You wouldn't buy a toaster that didn't. You wouldn't buy an iron that didn't. I mean, so there are people who are willing to essentially pay up for somebody to inspect goods coming from various countries, companies, because maybe they don't trust everybody. But they're willing to pay for it. And guess what? There is in the market, there will be people that will provide that. There's people that provide, you know, I mean, what do you think Yelp and these other people do for restaurants? You know, there's people that, you know, essentially have advertising, and they will, you know, whether they do it straight or not, I think they probably do. But the other people are convinced that every business is there only to cut corners. And if government doesn't watch them, nothing will work. And that's the new tribe of, tribe, I use the word bad for her, but, that was a Freudian slip. I didn't mean that regarding her claim to be part Indian, but the, there's a tribe out there that says unless you have somebody in government.
Maybe that's what she meant all along.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't believe that, Kevin. I honestly don't. In this constant, we can't build the Golden Gate Bridge unless there's somebody from government watching them, planning for them, you know. You can't have four people watching for every guy working. The world just doesn't go anywhere that way. I mean, I honestly do not believe that. Now, whether that's a vestige of my...
Yeah, and Tom, we see eye to eye on that, you know, maybe with a little bit different slant. You know, certainly there is a baseline of law that you need, and maybe that baseline is just built around how you show fraud when fraud exists, because we do need those kinds of consumer protections, and we have them. We have more than enough of them right now. Our problem is, as it is with so many things, is we don't enforce, we get cozy relationships between those that inspect and those that are in the business, and so they, you know, it's the compliance activities, not necessarily safety activities, but compliance activities where we cut short, that prevents those who are overseeing from learning things. And when that happens, then we get a disaster, and we decide the thing we have to do is pass some new laws to make sure it never happens again, where all we really need to do is enforce the old ones, enforce the existing ones, and we'd be fine. And I'm always left scratching my head when the reaction is more legislation after not performing to the standard of the existing
legislation. This is my concern with... Not because you guys are more conservative than me, but let's put it this way. It's the reason why I think you feel like that when you scratch your head, and the reason why Lou feels the same way, and why Hal Snyder is even further afield on this, I'm going to say is you guys didn't have the advantage of taking two classes from George Stigler, because his whole life was writing on political economy and how politicians are incredibly businesslike, just the rest of the world doesn't understand the business they're in, and they do. If all of a sudden your consumer affairs division, matter of fact, there was a guy, I'm talking about a bizarre place, this guy at all these Red Rooster, was it Red Rooster store, Red Robin store, or something, remember those, Kevin?
Well, Red Robin is still exists. That's
no, no,
very,
these were grocery stores, but they were
kind of a gourmet hamburger type of chain.
Yeah, these were, I think, Red Rooster, but they were in the, you know, so I was a caddy, so we're talking 50 years ago. They were in all the bad neighborhoods, black neighborhoods, and whatever. Most of them weren't bad in those days; they were just, you know, minority neighborhoods, and poor white neighborhoods. And now, for that guy, all of a sudden one day he's out of business because somebody got wind of it, and I don't know how the hell they did. They went in and essentially inspected all the meat and cheese scales. So if you bought a pound of ham, you were getting like 14 and a half ounces. So they put the guy out of business in like a week. Anyway, he was a character, but, you know, those kinds of things I sort of get. I mean, nobody really knows when you go to get 10 gallons of gas. How would you know if once in a while somebody doesn't test to make sure you get a whole gallon? You'd never know. How would I know? I mean, so there are some weights and measures types of inspections you'd like to see people do. But what am I getting back to what I was saying about you? When something happens in the Red Rooster stores, as a politician, as a mayor, you're never going to say, I had 40 people in this assignment, and guess what? They were all sitting on their ass somewhere, and they all bleeped up. Well, that's one way to run your political business. Or you can say, I need stronger laws so I can help you even better than I could have before. Which sounds better?
Oh, the latter sounds better. But
well,
it doesn't to me, though. I mean, it sounds better. Let me put it this way. It might sound better to many people. It does not to me.
Well, I get
my,
it.
My radar goes off every single time I hear, we need comprehensive reform.
Well, okay. But if you're a used car salesman, which is another business that you and I would have a problem with, but it's a business that's been around forever, if all of a sudden you can't, the car you just bought won't start, the guy can say, God, it sounds like you got a dead battery. What else is wrong with this thing? Or the guy will say, Kevin, this is your lucky day, Mr. O'Neill, because I was a little worried about that battery, but now there's no question. I'm putting a new one in just for you. This thing's even better than you thought you were buying.
Yeah, I think that would be fine.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, see? But what politician
I'll go
is
back there and buy another one.
What politician is going
to
say
business to do right?
But I mean, the story is as you well know from your civics, which I don't think anybody does anymore, the legislative group makes the laws, the judicial group interprets the laws, and the executive group enforces the laws. So you're not going to get a president to say, the law was right there in front of my face, my group didn't enforce it, me bad. You're going to say, we need another law. The laws weren't sufficient, that's why I didn't do my job. Right?
Yeah, I understand. We're talking, we're talking in agreement with each other on this one.
We're not supposed to do that.
You know, truly, Tom, I teach this in class all the time. I tell them, especially in management classes, you got to do things like make sure you share credit with your team, all that. You're always giving credit with your team. I said, do it. I would prefer you do it because it's the right thing to do. That people who do good work deserve to get credit for it. But you know what? If you share credit with your team, everybody who sees you do that is going to say, what a guy, what a good boss. And so if you can't see your way clear to doing it because it's the right thing, do it because it's smart business.
Well, I think what you get, one of the issues, I think
that's what you're saying is, you know what? You'd like people to do things for the right reasons, but you know what? It usually doing the right thing is smart business too.
Well, that's right. But it also comes down to I'd love to find, and it got to be on YouTube. Everything in the world's on YouTube. Remember the guy? I'm going to say it has to be maybe when we were in college, Kevin. Remember the dude in Chicago who made the commercials that owned the Button Company? Remember any of those commercials?
No.
Well, the guy would come out and he was like second generation Button Company business. And like anybody in any business, you have to love, buttons. Your business. Matter of fact, the guy from Commonwealth Edison gave it.
Well, who doesn't?
Well, a guy from Commonwealth Edison gave a speech at the University Economic Club of Chicago. And he was pretty good. And he said, you know, I've been in this so long, I'm one of these guys that if there's four gorgeous naked women on the side of the road, I'm not even going to look. I'm looking at the power line next to them, seeing if that line looks good or not. He goes, I've been in the business my whole life. I love it. He goes, you can't detract me from it no matter how hard you try. And, you know, and this guy was like that for like the button manufacturer. But he was a whole different, now the difference here, I believe, honestly, Kevin, and critique me, it was a long-term situation. He said, I'm not going to be in this business and give it to my kids unless my employees are taken care of, the community is taken care of, we take care of the business, we do a good job, our buttons don't fall apart, and we take care of the environment. Unless all those things happen, I can't guarantee I'm going to be here 30 years from now to give the business to my kids. And so he's like, you can't, basically said, you can't screw you can screw your employees for a year or two. You can't screw them for 20 years. You can mess with the environment for a while. Eventually you're going to get caught and you got to pay more than it would have been to just get rid of the stuff right in the first place. I mean, basically in a commercial, the guy was telling you how a long-term business eventually has to reward everybody or else it doesn't make it. And yet we see some of our businesses and clearly on the political side, it's way too short-term. I mean, these guys lurch from crisis to crisis. And I could honestly see, Kevin, one of us or the two-headed monster landing in the Oval Office and maybe like what happened to Bush too, there's an attack this, there's something there, there's, you never get anywhere. In 8 years, you never even make it to your agenda. Because all this crap starts flying at you from day one. I think we've had somewhat of a succession of that. Until we really don't have the ability to sit there. I mean, I can think of, and I think, well, we talk on the show, 5 to 10 topics that need serious nose to the grindstone work of both houses of Congress, the administrative office, and maybe even judges opining on whether it's legal or not. I can think of, obviously we know about healthcare, we know about the financial community to me needs massive help in terms of competitiveness and so forth. I mean, the healthcare community is a job for 1,000 people to put back together right, I think, or to figure out how you want it to be. I mean, these are incredible undertakings, Kevin. And yet we don't have any kind of long-term solution out of it anywhere. I'm thinking even the military stuff. I'm not so sure we're doing that right. I mean, how do you go from saying you need 16 aircraft carriers, now you got one you're $13 billion into, the damn thing doesn't work, and you've scrapped 6, you're down to 10 or 9. I mean, who's writing these plans? And the guys writing them, are they the guy executing them, or what are we doing? I mean, we need a lot of work going on here, and I don't see it starting, because every short term, we spend a day whether Pelosi's got a flight commercial to Iraq or the hell she's going. I mean, come on. How do you do both?
They're not going, but that's... No. Yeah, I mean, we're into petty stuff. By the way, the best comment I saw on that, as you know, Speaker Pelosi very publicly sent a letter to Trump asking him to either delay the State of the Union or submit it by letter, by in written form, because of security concerns. And you know, clearly, the next day, Trump cancels the flight. And the best comment I heard was, "Never troll the king of trolls."
Well, the thing of it is now, if it was you,
which is funny but not productive.
If it was you and me, okay. I mean, I'm not speaking for you, but I'm speaking for me. You know what people in this country and a lot of our listeners maybe don't know. You know, Maddie looked this up before. I'm going to pound this out there, but I'm not sure I'm still right, but I was told a while ago. I think when the head of the British government, when Theresa May comes over here, I think she flies first class on a British Air. I don't think she has. There's Air Force One for the Brits. What Nancy Pelosi should do, she should get on there, and everybody should bring one bodyguard, and they should plant their fannies on a commercial plane over there and get a private plane that they, I'm sure they have the budget to rent, since she flies on every weekend, and rent a private plane and fly in there. Say, are we
going
anywhere?
I think she flies military over the weekend.
I'm saying, why should you? Say, okay, I'm going commercial. We're going.
But you can't, look, if you're going to go into Afghanistan, you got to fly secure. I get that. My real question is, why are you leaving town? We're supposed to be getting some, getting the government reopened. And whether you're finding Trump to be an intractable negotiator or not, you have to be there to negotiate. And as soon as you leave, what you're really saying is, I'm not willing to negotiate.
I agree.
At least not for the next week. So I think it was a bad idea to go. She just happened to take her shot the day before and got one back. And that's, like I said, it's not productive, but it's predictable.
The UK prime ministers got their own version of Air Force One in 2016. Before that, senior members of government used Royal Squadron for short-haul flights and chartered commercial flights for longer distances.
Okay, because what's-her-name didn't make it down to... who was the... Theresa May. They didn't make it down to the thing in Brazil because the charter flight conked out in Spain. Remember that was like a year ago. They were late for the. They were late.
Well, it was longer than a year ago because 2016 they got their own Air Force One.
Well, but okay, now that one conked because they. What was the big thing down in Argentina where Trump and the Chinese guy were shaking hands? They were late for that because the plane conked out in Spain. And their version of Air Force One mustn't be as good. I bet it didn't cost as much. S&P futures still up 12. NASDAQ futures up 32. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board. Kevin O'Neill. XP futures up 11.25. Dow up 153. NASDAQ up 29. We're still way up there, a little less than we came in, but just a little. Over in Europe. Again, this is all more and more optimism on this trade deal. This guy's coming there, that guy's going there, whatever. DAX up 158, 1.5%. FTSE up 94, 1.4%. So apparently it's this time for sure. We're really going to fix this China thing. Tech around up 75, 1.6. I actually think we are going to probably get closer to declaring victory because even some of the Republicans, I think, are jumping on Trump about these tariffs. Shanghai up 36, that's 1.4%. Nikkei up 263, 1.3. Hang Seng up 335. I believe the actual thing that happened yesterday, you know, this is bizarre. Again, me ripping on these guys about are they trading it. Mnuchin came out and said they were going to lower the tariffs as a sign of good faith. And somebody came out later and said they weren't going to do that, but I think they actually are planning on doing that. At least that was the third story. So the idea is the tariffs might be being lowered as a peace offering to the Chinese, and if that happens, I guess it will probably cause something to happen to the positive. Oil up 82 cents, Brent up 88 cents, natural gas down 9, 331. RBOB 144, the highest we've seen that in a bit, and home heating oil 189. RBOB's up from like 135, probably up almost a dime, really, in I'm going to say the last 2 weeks. Gold down 780, 1284. Silver down 4 cents. They're not going anywhere. Copper up 4 cents, 272. Palladium all-time high, I believe, at 1375. Eddie, what do you got for us traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues already this morning, and the snow hasn't even arrived yet, Chief. And we have a crash on the inbound Kennedy just before Diversey that's causing delays already. O'Hare to downtown up to 52 minutes on the inbound side. From Montrose, 35 minutes into the circle. Express lanes are still 18 minutes and moving smoothly. But expect higher traffic times on the inbound Kennedy while they work to get this crash cleared at Diversey. Outbound side looks okay. No issues on the Edens yet. Eisenhower, Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways are all quiet. We do have a crash on Lakeshore Drive. Northbound reported. Looks like just before Belmont on the northbound side, and that's causing some delays. Backing that up to the Diversey Fullerton area, so give yourself plenty of time if you're heading north on Lakeshore Drive from downtown. Off the expressways, there's a report of down power lines on the south side, 119th and Vincennes. That's causing some backup. Western suburbs, Carroll Stream, Gary Avenue at Lies Road, there's a crash. Just north of there, there's the police funeral at 10 a.m. on Algonquin Road at Willow Creek. And so there's some blockages for that, so expect some delays during that funeral service a little bit later this morning. So just keep that in mind. Weather today, the big snowstorm, or at least depending on what you read, it could be big, is expected to arrive this evening and then last overnight into Saturday. Depending on where you are in the area, you could get anywhere from 5 to 10 inches of snow accumulation, and it's expected to begin around the evening commute, 5 o'clock Chicago time here, and then last throughout the evening, overnight, and into Saturday, with the worst of it coming on Saturday. Anticipate that later on. But for the most part today, it's going to be cloudy, and where we're at right now, 31 degrees is where we're at, and that's our high for today, 31 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 69. Right now, it's mostly clear and 53. In sports, NBA basketball, Bulls were blown out in Denver 135-105. Suns lost a close one to Toronto 111-109. Blackhawks are now the worst team in the NHL after losing to the Rangers 4-3. Coyotes were off. College hoops, both Arizona teams were in action. The Arizona Wildcats lost at home to Oregon 59-54. Arizona State beat Oregon State 70-67. Chief.
It's a good thing we got that new coach.
For which
both teams?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? I think Joel Quenneville's probably saying that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because he doesn't have to live with this mess every day. And like, I won't, you know, I won't be critical about that, about the Blackhawks mess. Sooner or later, the cap and age catch up to you. So, you know, they had their run. The question now is, can they rebuild their team into another contender?
The answer appears to be no. at least not for a while.
Well, not this year, not in a year or two's time.
Yeah, why would the answer appear to be no?
Can they get it back so that they can have another, you know, another essentially decade where they're one of the best teams in hockey?
Well,
yeah, they had a 10-year run that we've never seen in this town in hockey ever.
I get that part, but look at the other teams that have fallen out of favor and have been, well, Toronto's been on the 20-year plan, right?
Sure, but you've also seen some of the better franchises fall off and come back, so it's there.
Toronto never had anything in place like this. I mean, when's the last time they won a Stanley Cup?
Well, that's my point.
That's an apples and oranges comparison.
I'm saying you can be like teams in the NBA. You can fall off into this never land and kind of never come back.
The last time Toronto
won, that's what's going. Are you telling us that's what's going to happen?
No, I'm saying that's
going to happen. I'm
saying it's at least as likely to happen when you fall off as all of a sudden 10 years later be just as good as you were. It's hard to do.
It is hard to do. I think the point is that with this administration, it's all still in place. And there's no reason to believe that they can't turn it around and compete again. Not that they're going to win three more cups and be a dynasty like they were, but at least compete again. Toronto hasn't won a cup since 1967. I have no idea where that came from.
Well, and the Cubs,
recent success.
Right, and the Hawks hadn't been until 61.
If you would have said Detroit, that made more sense because they had a dynasty in the 90s and early 2000s, and they haven't really gotten back to that.
Okay, but before the Hawks won the first one this time, their last one was 61.
That has nothing to do with what we're talking about. We're talking about this administration has won three Cups and been a dynasty for 10 years where they were deep in the playoffs for 10 straight years. Now, as Kevin mentioned, cap and age has hit them, but the same guys are in place. Can they turn it around?
All right, and Mike?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch. I'm not predicting one way or the other. What I am saying is, though, they have people who put together a team from scratch before, so let's see if these people can do it again.
Okay, in my point there, it's like I think a lot of times big-time sports is a lot like trading. You don't, if you're really good at it, you don't need a whole lot of luck, but you need an absence of bad luck. When the people,
okay,
like the Cubs went from being not very good to being very good, and they drafted well. They really didn't have an injury along the way, which is terrific. I love the people they have. Chris Bryant's the World of Baez, those kind of guys. Now all of a sudden, the last 2 years, they're sort of snake bit. They've signed three people last year and they're all hurt.
And they've still been great.
Well, okay, but they're not on an up move after those three people. My point being is, you can go draft all these guys, and in hockey, and Kevin knows better than anybody, is a much different process because when you start drafting people, they go play in college for another 3 years. It's a much slower process. And you could fall into a situation where you draft like you did before, the guys like Taze and the guys like Patrick Kane, and they all come here, they're all solid, they all last 10, 12, 15 years. The Duncan Keith, these are serious guys. You also could draft three guys like that. They go play for Boston College in their sophomore year. They break a leg and you never see them. I'm saying it's very difficult to do is all my point is. And just because you happen to be...
Nobody said it wasn't.
Yeah, and I'm just saying that as good as you are, there's more luck in there than you think. And I do believe that the Hawks have a real seriously good management. But that doesn't mean that the next 15 guys you draft are going to sort of make it. I mean,
okay.
I hope they do because I think.
I go back to the original point. Their challenge now is see if they can rebuild another one.
That's right.
We'll see.
Yeah, right. And you don't need stuff like what happened to Corey Crawford, right? I mean, that's I'll put that in the seriously unlucky page. That guy should.
Put it in the seriously unlucky, except to say that as far as it pertains to rebuilding the team, Corey Crawford was probably not going to be part of the rebuild anyway.
Probably. Okay. I'm just saying there's a lot of fortune you'd like to have smile your way. Well, injury is one of them for sure.
By the way, yeah. PGA Saluki writes in, it was German Chancellor Merkel whose plane had mechanical problems
the
way to Argentina,
right.
Not Theresa May.
That's right, and it was some kind of charter. I don't know if they have an Air Force One.
I assume they do. But I don't know. They might not. I can look up Germany as well.
You're saying is German engineering failed her.
Yeah.
Which is very surprising.
I got an email yesterday. I don't know why they sent it to me and not you, but I had to do with my little rant about government employees saying that this is a tough one for me because I think I pride myself on knowing or thinking I know or trying to find out how hand-to-mouth most people are in this country now. When I say hand-to-mouth, paycheck to paycheck, you wouldn't think they are in this, quote, world's greatest economy, as our politicians tell us. So it really, on the one hand, it doesn't surprise me that government employees who you think have never missed a paycheck and should be, if anybody can be putting $50 away a week, it could be them, that how on the edge of the world they are. And then again, on this show, we've talked many times, Kevin, I don't know if you've been on, where I just ran across a piece of paper as I'm cleaning my place up, where what percentage of the population, even people that are thought to be wealthy, can't put their hands on $2,000 cash if they need it. I mean, they might be able to run it up on a credit card, but if all of a sudden their transmission conks out and it's a $3,000 bill, they could not walk in and pay cash or with a check to people. And that's pretty scary. So it doesn't surprise me that government people are having this problem after one or two paychecks, and I feel really bad for them. But I also know that sometimes the only way you understand what other people's businesses are like, when you're, like the person who wrote this article or wrote this letter to me was a carpenter, and how many times every 2 years he just plain gets laid off and doesn't have a job the next day. I mean, it doesn't sort of hurt for somebody to see at least a little bit how an awful lot of other people live. And it is, you can't even count on the paycheck. And there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I get the point. I don't.
That doesn't mean you're watching anybody get hurt. No,
it's people who have this happening to them through no fault of their own.
Well, okay.
I think these government employees that you're talking about too are people that are making like $10 an hour for the most part,
right?
Or $15 an hour.
I'll bet
they're not saving anything.
I'll bet the people that are whining are. That's the odd part.
You think the guy in the park ranger or the TSA guy is making some big amount of money or something? I mean, these people are like regular blue collar people.
You're correct.
That took whatever good job they could get or decent job they could get, and they can't miss one paycheck.
I guess what I'm saying, Matt, is I understand that these guys don't make that much. These are not spectacular paying jobs. But I also have read an awful lot of stuff, and again, I read all this crap, so it clouds my brain, for lack of a better term.
If the shutdown was affecting senators, I'd be waving same flag as you.
Oh, yeah.
but it's not.
I mean, it's not affecting the people at the Fed.
If the shutdown was only affecting senators, yeah, I'd say, close it.
Well, but then you read studies, Manny, that say if you ask people of every income frame what it would take, they're not winning the lottery, what it would take to pay off your credit cards, help with the car payment, maybe any other kind of debt you have, and take a small vacation with the wife to Blue Island or someplace. I've read studies where no matter people are making $20,000 a year or making $2 million a year, the number comes out to be 20% of a year's salary. That virtually everybody, no matter how much money you're making, is living ahead of themselves. Some of it might be enthusiasm, that this job I just got is going to be the 5-year job, so I'll buy the new car because I got to get to work, and I'll put it on the 5-year, the 5-year plan. And everybody, this is still America. We still like to think that next year is going to be as good as the year before. And I think that, you see it. And again, I'm not ranting and raving here because I'm supposed to be too liberal anyway, right? I'm not ranting and raving about government employees, but They honestly don't see what other people are going through. I honestly believe that. I mean, when you see the teachers in California going through some massive strike now, I'm gonna guess that if you look at their paychecks and their benefits versus other people 20 years ago and what they are now, you'd be either very encouraged if you're a teacher or horrified if you weren't. And yet they don't think it's enough. And I would bet that if you fired all of them and put a sign up and said we will pay 85% of what we used to pay and the benefits are cut by 20%, I bet the lines are around the block. I mean, at some point, it's not like I don't like teachers. You know that. You know that too, Kevin. I like everybody. But at some, these things are starting to not match up. And once in a while, a group needs to understand what it's like to be on the other half lives. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's team needs to get rained down once in a while to know what a muddy field feels like. I honestly believe that. I know it's probably wrong, but whatever. This is supposed to be your side of the argument.
Again, it's not wrong. It's, you know, in the individual cases, we don't want to wish ill on people.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But there are lessons that are learned along the way, and I guess in that regard, it isn't a bad thing.
I don't want to see anybody.
I think it is wrong.
Well, I don't want to see anybody lose, Matty, but I also know you learn a lot of lessons when you lose. And people who have never lost probably aren't the kind of people you want to hang around with.
In America, the amount of wealth that's in this country, I don't want anyone being, you know, out of work, having to choose between mac and cheese and McDonald's hamburgers, living hand to mouth. I don't want anyone doing
that.
The example I use, Matty, is, you know, am I going to feed the kids mac and cheese, or am I going to have enough left over to cut up some hot dogs and put them in there?
Right, exactly. And I don't want to learn some lesson that Chief's made up in his head. These are working class poor people that are affected.
I understand that.
And I don't want them learning. They've learned lessons their whole lives. They've probably been, you're acting,
yeah,
like
there are also some very well off people, and I think that's where Tom's going with it. You know, some people who, because government, you know, professional government people nowadays are making more than the private sector, but. You think of all the people who work in, you know, in lunchrooms or cafeterias.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For government, the people who, you know, Matt mentioned TSA. You could say the same thing about people who are tangentially affected, like people who have businesses that have a lot of government clientele. You know, at work, a lunch restaurant or something like that. There's a lot of fallout to this, and it's not a good thing to have happening. I understand why everybody's really dug in, and they have their. Well, I'm not sure I understand totally, but you know, I sort of get it. But I really want them to sit down and get to work and get this. You know, come up with something. Strangely, there's polling that is showing that a lot of Hispanic people are increasing, or the amount of Hispanic support for Trump is increasing, and it is because he's willing to trade a DACA fix for this, and he's just getting told no.
I'm not so sure he is
willing to trade enough for it, and is the wall a good idea and all that. That's a different debate, but you do have a lot of people saying take that deal.
Well, there's. You gotta pull lessons out of this. And I know I'm somewhat unpopular. Maybe that's why the guy sent the email to me personally. He knows I'm losing this on the air, but there's several lessons here. One is, even government employees are living paycheck to paycheck. People that have never not gotten a paycheck.
Well, I think what you're missing is that the TSA agent probably 2 years ago was a security guard, probably 2 years before that was working at McDonald's, probably 2 years before. I mean, he's had every lesson he can have. He's not some bureaucrat.
I understand.
He's just not.
Well, what the bureaucrat should take notice of.
He knew a guy that knew a guy, and he got a job.
Well, the bureaucrat should take notice of is how many people, even government workers, are at the edge of the cliff. Because that lesson is clearly here. Because people are feeling it. And I'll tell you what, as we talk about on the show all the time, God help the guy whose job is in like downtown Chicago and he's still paying $25 a day to park and he's not getting a paycheck. Because the cost of going to work. I mean, imagine a low-level guy living and working in Washington, D.C., and you're a janitor in one of those buildings. Where the hell do you live? There's no Oakland around or South Side around Washington. Where the hell do you live?
There's some really poor areas in Washington.
Okay, well, less and less.
That's where they live.
Less and less.
That's true. They're getting forced out, but yeah. There still is.
So I'm saying, well, how do those people live? How does a low-level government employee in Washington live? Or in New York City, for God's sake. I could see if you're paying, what does it cost to go across the bridge every day in the Manhattan? Was it $15 now, Kevin? How the hell do you do that if you're not getting a paycheck?
David writes in, I've noticed in my lifetime that when a person felt they would be getting a good pension, like a defined benefit, they tended to save less than some that knew that they had to rely on self-funded futures. Government workers need to save less hypothetically because they can.
Well, most other people's, even if you save it in a 401k, you're not getting it out of there. You've got to have a penalty to live on it. So yeah, he's right to a certain extent.
Yeah, to a certain extent, but I would agree with your response that if you're paying into a 401k, it's really no different. You can't touch it, so it's still. I don't think you're saving less.
Well, we should be patting ourselves on the back a little bit because it's showing that what we've been saying is maybe the economy isn't as good as people think. That an awful lot of people, and we cite this all the time whenever we find a study that are not doing as well as you think. I mean, I don't think anybody at age 45 has 6 months or a year's paycheck saved up. I mean, I don't want to say anybody. That's a big word. But not very many people, Kevin, I don't think. I mean, I'm talking about in a savings account, not in their retirement, just a just-in-case number. I know.
I'm not sure if you increased everybody in real terms 10% that you'd have enough saving anyway.
That's what I'm saying. I think people are 20% behind. I mean, look at the amount of debt that's all over the place.
I think a lot of it is a consumer mindset that's been beaten into us as an American society for however long, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. You have to have the next new thing. You have to compete with everyone else, and you're willing to put a credit card down, and you're willing to accumulate debt, and I think that's part of it. And then I also think part of it is we keep over and over and over putting in legislation that drives more money to the top and less to everyone
else.
Absolutely. And I think it's a combination of those two things. Kevin's right. If you gave everyone the $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 bucks that they need to get out of hock, within 5 years, they'd probably be right back where they started.
Well, look at when you talk about last week, you were actually... you had a little report on Apple, Matty, and it's starting out. It's more often now that you actually have a lot of really good stuff to say as you mature. How do you contrast?
I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but thank you.
Well, it is.
Yeah. What are you saying about what he used to say?
Well, I mean, you know, he was young, and now he's not as young. How do you contrast the? Why do you need to buy $1,000 phone when you get the same thing for $200 anywhere? Pretty much.
Yeah.
How do you contrast that with? You can't go to the school out with Russell unless you buy the Apple laptop, which, of course, then you're not going to get some other phone because they hook up to each other.
It's no different than you have to get this education versus that education when they use the same books. It's no different than in certain neighborhoods where you can't afford to do anything, yet you have the new $200 Jordans every 2 weeks when they come out. I mean, we see it across all spectrums of life, and it's an American consumerism thing that I think when other people come here, they're like, what the hell? I don't think everyone else deals with it.
That is true. I mean, I'll tell you what, though. My first time I went to Amsterdam, we went for a wedding. Well, the wedding was in Denmark. We landed in Amsterdam. I think Converse All-Stars, which at the time were $25 here, were $100 over there. I'm like... That's a Converse All-Star. I never paid more than $20 for that in my life. They were $100. So those guys pay through the nose.
Yeah,
for
now they're expensive here too.
They're
a fashion statement now.
And you know, I don't think they're as good. They don't look the same to me.
I should have stocked up on them when I could get them for $7.
Whatever the when they were the you had two decisions to make in this world as a player, Matty. Well, what were they?
I assume the color, or is it high versus low?
High versus low, black versus white. That was it. And
I used to have some Chucks, as we called them.
I used to, you know, there wasn't even, I'm going to say, I don't want to date myself here more than I already do, but I'm going to say when I used to go out running at night, you know, to get in shape for basketball, there were no, quote, running shoes. I'm talking in 1975.
No,
you didn't.
I got to be honest, I can't imagine running in those.
Well, either that or your street shoes.
Well, I'm just saying it would be painful.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God for technology.
Which is why we have running shoes.
Which is why we all have running shoes. I mean, there was none of that stuff. When you saw your dads or your uncles or neighbors out mowing the lawn, they were wearing an old pair of their dress shoes.
And of course, the black socks.
Yeah, the black socks.
The shorts.
I mean, there was no, you know, 15 different kinds of Adidas or Nike or anything like that. They wore an old pair of dress pants or blue jeans or something. You know, I don't know. I mean, it was just a whole different brand of ball. People went out biking. They went out in like an old pair of like an old suit. Damn near. It was really crazy. I mean,
one of my old bosses used to say, he was president of the bank, and he used to say, we do these casual days, and we think we're doing people a favor, but what you're doing is you're forcing our low end. You know, are the people who can least afford it that work here to go buy another wardrobe because they have two wardrobes. They have the wardrobe they wear to work, and they have the wardrobe that they use to cut the grass and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you also make people go out and buy khakis and a polo shirt and a blue blazer, that's another whole thing, the desert casual
right.
thing.
Right, so you're forcing an expense on them if they want to comply.
All right,
now,
Kevin.
Nowadays, it's all business casual, so you don't have to worry about it.
Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week. We're no show on Monday. Is there a special game or anything down there on Monday or no for the holidays?
I don't know. I haven't looked that far ahead, but the Irish are playing tomorrow, so playing NC State tomorrow.
All right, take care, buddy. Up, SP all Futures right. up 11.75, Dolphins up 161, NASDAQ Futures up 32. We have Mr. Carl Denninger when we come back. Special guest star today.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Carl Denninger called in on short notice. Thank you, Carl. SP Futures up 1250. Dow Futures up 163. NASDAQ Futures up 34. And again, yesterday, and I know, I don't think I'm getting anywhere with this, Carl, but maybe it's because maybe I know more about the industry than most of the listeners, but you know, one more day where a guy like Mnuchin comes out and talks about how we might lower the tariffs as a sign of good faith. The market runs up, and then all of a sudden they come out and say senior administrative officials have no intention of doing that. And we come back down, and then we're back this morning. If these idiots aren't trading on this, Carl, then they're bigger idiots than I think, for God's sake. But
I mean, it's and anyone who thinks that this isn't an intentional act to play games with the markets is a bigger idiot than you think, too. Yeah.
Carl, I'd like you to opine in on something that there's really no resolution to, but we were talking about it before you came on. It has to do with the shutdown on the, and I come with this on the, like from the trading floor standpoint that it was back when you know money was good and stuff. It sort of was. I don't know if you know anything about trading floors, but the protocol sort of was if there was an outtrade, if you couldn't figure out exactly whose it was, the market maker pretty much ate the outtrade and the broker got off scot free. Even you know, and most of the time it might have been the market maker's fault. Most of the time. But in the back of your mind, it always was one of these days. Because you might have to eat $3,000-$4,000, which you know is a lot of money. But once in the back of your mind was one day, I'd just like to see the broker eat $100, just to understand how exactly it feels to come away with less than you walked in with. But it's in all walks of life. I mean, if somebody always was on the best baseball team and never lost, there's lessons in losing. I mean, and I think for a lot of the government, people have lost a paycheck or two, which I don't want to see happen. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. But it's not for them to realize what it's like once in a while to not get the next paycheck. Otherwise, people get laid off and stuff are just nothing but names on the paper or numbers in the paper. There's a fine line between, I mean, you don't want anything bad to happen to anybody, but yet you only learn through bad stuff, not necessarily through good stuff. I mean, it's like the human condition type of thing. Where do you opine on that, or am I just talking? I shouldn't even talk about it.
No, I think you're right, but it's even worse than that from a standpoint of the real impact here, because Trump's already signed the bill, despite people claiming that we're never going to get the money. First off, that's never happened. Okay, in every shutdown that has occurred thus far, everyone has always been retroactively paid, including the people who didn't actually have to come to work.
Right.
Okay, so they've been paid to sit on their butt or sit in the bar. All right, which, I mean, I'd love to get paid to sit in the bar, even if it doesn't happen for a couple of weeks. Or a couple months, or however long it takes. The second lesson, though, in here, which I think is really where the rubber hits the road on this, is that it points out how stupid the general American person is when it comes to money management and just being able to survive even minor hiccups in their life. Anyone who cannot go a couple of paychecks and not end up destitute and in the street and screaming, oh, woe is me, oh my gosh. And oh, by the way, we're not talking about actually losing the money either. We're just talking about you don't get it right away on time. Anyone who can't do that and is in a middle class or better situation, look, I get it. There are people that are literally working poor, but the people who are working for the government are not in this situation except by their own hand and their own actions. If you've put yourself in that spot, then when anything terrible in life happens, you're in a world of hurt, and that's self-inflicted injury.
I'm going to say it depends, Carl. I mean, I know, you know, I that I think it's one of the reasons why you like coming on the show is that my view of the world is that I have, you know, 10, 15, 20 people that I keep pretty good track on, and they're friends or not necessarily family. Family's not that big. But I have a pretty good idea of where they are economically and what has happened to them. And I'll tell you what, in Chicago, it's a tremendous creep in terms of taxes, insurance, cost to get to work, parking. I mean, when you say how could somebody be in that kind of trouble, if you have to actually commute to work in Manhattan and all of a sudden you're not getting paid, the drain on your pocketbook just taking the bridge in or the tunnel in or whatever, or a train from New Jersey, I mean, you're talking about serious money just to get there. I mean, I can't imagine being a lower-level worker in Washington. I'm saying you're right, but stuff happens to people. I know people that are are pretty serious workers. They're attorneys, they're this, that, the other thing. Anybody who that maybe bought a house and now the taxes are double what they were when they bought it, say the lawyer business or the real estate business hasn't exactly doubled in the last 10 years, all of a sudden the tuition at the school the kid goes to, or you now have two kids in school instead of one, the creep is coming at you an awful lot faster than your raises and just about anywhere in this country.
Because that's absolutely true, but guess what? All that creep is happening because of the politicians we allow to infest those offices.
I guess what
and so when you get down to it, what it comes down to is this. The creep is and has happened, but when you boil it down, we're responsible for it as citizens. We have the ability to put a stop to it whenever we decide we've had enough of this nonsense. And we've gotten this mentality, this entitlement mentality, especially among government workers, that nothing terrible is ever going to happen. There's never going to be a situation where my paycheck doesn't come in on time. I can't be fired for anything except, having sex with a goat in my office. And therefore, I can spend, all but the last $10 of my paycheck by the time the next one comes in. What kind of insanity has led to that? And by the way, if you want to know why the property taxes have been allowed to creep up like this and there hasn't been a revolt by the people who live in these areas, that's part of the reason.
But you know what, Kyle? There will be people that say, and I love jousting with you, but because you have opinions, and this stuff is becoming very, very complicated. Did you watch Face the Nation last Sunday?
No.
They had, I'm sorry, it was a week before. They had, four young, this happened. I think the week before they might have done Republicans, but this week they happened to be four freshman legislators that won. And you know what, Carl? They were pretty impressive. There's this black lady that had been in Iraq, and there was another guy that was something. But they pretty much all had a this black guy who won in Texas, first Democrat to win in that district in like a bazillion years. They're pretty impressive people. Except for the one poor guy who looked just like Putin. I don't know if I'd wish that on anybody, but he was doing the best he could. Brilliant guy. I mean, he seemed, and the funny part was, Carl, and you would love this. I'm saying, if Carl Denninger, I was thinking about you when I watched it. The lady says, "What was your message?" He goes, "The same as Trump's. Exact same as Trump's." And she looks at him and she goes, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "This has been going back away." He goes, "People now want change out of Washington." Just what you're saying. He goes, they elected an outsider, and now look what they've got. He goes, now they're looking for, they're looking for people in Washington to be responsive. He goes,
right.
Trump had, he goes, why wouldn't we use the same campaign? That's still what people want. They're still not getting it. and she looked at the guy like, this is so simple. It was Obama, a guy who hadn't had a chance to be in Washington long enough to be co-opted. Well, that, in most people's minds, didn't work out. Now we got a guy from the total outside, and whether you still like him or don't like him or whatever, the fact is, that's not working out so hot either. And now the question is, are we going right back to the, now we're going to try young people in the party that seem like they're just as disgusted as we are, and maybe these guys over the next few years could flush it out. When you say we can change it, it's not all that obvious, and if next time you're in town when we have an election, I'll be happy to take you down to the, I'll say I'm blind and you gotta come with me to the voting booth. And if you think that the voting in my district allows me to do anything for a change, you got another thing coming, my big guy, because half the people, three quarters of people are unopposed. Other people, I'm a little finger of a district for the rep and other stuff. They're not even, the district's 90% African American. And they grab 10% out of what they call the ranch triangle, essentially to negate our votes for anything. Not that blacks are going to vote against whites or anything like that, but these are people that I'll never even see by me. And if I called them up, they'd say, "Who are you?" So the idea of me being represented or something I can do about it, I mean, that ain't happening, big guy. I mean, it's just not.
Well, no, it's, I used to live in Chicago, in the city proper, a couple blocks from Wrigley, that was one of the precincts that had over 100% turnout more than once. Gee, I wonder what happened there. How do you have more than 100% of the people that are registered to vote show up and vote.
You have a couple people with Alzheimer's. They forgot they voted in the morning, went back in the afternoon.
Well, you know, it's a vote early and often is yeah. a, you know, is a cliche from Chicago, but it's more true than anybody wants to admit. That no, I'm not talking about necessarily just showing up the voting box, which, you know, is certainly something that people should be doing and obviously are doing. We had very high turnout in this last election. I'm talking about the citizens of this country putting a marker down on the table and saying this is going to stop, like the jacking that everybody is getting from the medical system,
right?
And the jam job that's resulting throughout the economy. If you want to know where your property tax jamming is coming from, it's coming from there. All right, and people standing up and saying this is going to stop. It's going to stop now. There are already laws that make this conduct illegal and something that can't happen. You're going to enforce them, and if you don't, really bad things are going to happen. We'll start with the legal ones, like a general strike.
Well,
the thing is, until the people stand up and say this is going to stop, it isn't going to stop. Because look at what happens. People get to Washington. You know, you got. I call her occasional cortex. People have different dates for her, even less complimentary. And you know, she wants Medicare for everybody and, you know, 500 different other things. She's got this green plan. You look at the numbers on it and you say, that's impossible. There's no way to fund it. And her answer is, oh, the Fed will just print the money.
Right.
Well, gee, what have they been doing for the last 25 years? And nobody has stood up and said, stop it.
But Carl, things are... I keep saying everybody, I'm cleaning my office, which means all the pieces of paper that I kept from 9 years ago when we started the show, I still haven't read them again. And there's one paper here that says, it's a poll that Bloomberg took 9 years ago, 8 years ago. People want the deficit cut. They don't want defense cut. They don't want entitlements cut. They want everything just the way they are, but they want the deficit cut.
Right. Which is impossible.
And we have 13 people now, last count, man, you probably know better, run for mayor here. And Carl, I listened to them, and there's some bright people there, probably. Every one of them talks about, but the things that are standard, and again, before you came on earlier, I was regaling Kevin a little bit about the one advantage or disadvantage, because I think about it too much, that I had was I actually had George Stigler in class twice in University of Chicago. And he was a political economy guy. Probably, as a matter of fact, I enjoyed his class more than I did Milton Friedman's by far. And that's kind of what I turned into being, I guess, a political economist nut. And it's a business just like other businesses, Carl. When people say it should be run like a business, they're blithering idiots regarding it. The fact is, it is run like a business, the business of politics, which is just different than you're in my business. But it's not. It's not like it's its own business. You can't, now, and every one of these guys run, and we're going to try and get a couple of them on the air. Maybe we can have you on a couple of times when they're on, which would be kind of cool. They're all going to talk about more revenue for the city. Okay, not cutting anything. But it's all going to be more revenue, and it's going to be a source that doesn't bother you. It's going to be a downtown casino. We're going to get people from out of town. It's going to be an increase in the commuter tax. We're going to get the guys from the suburbs. It's going to be, we'll put video poker in the bars, even though we know that that's about the most aggressive tax you can find. It's all going to be, we're going to raise all this revenue, but it's not going to affect you. Raises of parking meters, or not parking meters, but fire hydrant. You know, if you park in front of the hydrant, it'll make it $1,000. And even you, Carl, you'll sit there and go, well, I don't park in front of a fire hydrant. I guess I can roll with this one. And I don't know if you have a family, and all of a sudden one day your daughter comes home with a 5-hour ticket parked in front of the fire hydrant. You're like, okay, well, I guess I could beat her, but that's not going to help. I still got to pay somebody. I still got to pay $500. I still got to pay $500. I'll feel better if I beat her, I suppose, but it's still, I still got to pay the $500. Yeah. So, but the thing is, people don't realize it does come home to roost because somebody they're going to get. Or what did Jill get, Maddie? The 75-hour ticket for allegedly parking, what, 12 and a half inches from the curb?
Yeah, they said she was over 12 inches away from the curb. She clearly wasn't, or she was right on the border. It was ridiculous. And, she had to pay it, $75.
So, I mean, the thing of it is, Carl, it's relentless. And one thing, ever since Ronald Reagan essentially fired everybody, which I'm not saying he shouldn't have, but the matter of fact, I think some of these teacher people maybe need to be some areas. I'm not so sure that we don't need Dutch back for something like that. But I don't see how you could ever have any kind of a real demonstration. Now, the government has pretty much shown that they can, if they're having a political convention in Chicago, they can make your little spot for your demonstration to be in Rockford, and then you got to roll with it. I mean,
no, you don't.
Well, seemingly.
Well, see that's the problem, is that what everybody seems to have forgotten is the words of the founding fathers in the Declaration of Independence, that all government exists only with the consent of the governed. And people say, well, but now you're saying, you know, grab your gun. No, I'm not. How long does the government stand on its policies if you, I, and everybody else says, we're not going to work tomorrow, there's going to be no gasoline in the gas stations, there's going to be no food in the food stores, there's going to be no, and the most important aspect of it from the government point of view, there's going to be no tax revenue generated.
Right, so Carol, right?
Now how long does that go on before the people in D.C. or in Illinois or in Chicago turn around and say, we really don't have a way to solve this other than do what they want?
All right, so you pile out of school, and you've got a, you know, $250,000 to $300,000 student loan issue, and you go to work for one of the firms that is now big and is doing very well with this current state of government. I'll call one of the firms that are in the fascist infrastructure. You know, the four firms in the industry with their nose up the ass of government that we're starting to see in every industry. Now, are you going to be able to? Your employer is going to enforce the rules, not the government.
How are they going to do that? So he fires me, but the problem is that everybody else is going along with it. Nobody will take the job, and he still has no food on the shelf.
The thing is this.
I understand that what you're saying, you know, one guy, okay, that says, you know, F you, it gets nowhere, right? I mean, that's the same thing happens. One guy flies in a light airplane into an IRS building. That doesn't do anything either. One nut job blows up a bunch of people in Boston. It doesn't do anything.
Right.
So, I mean, violence individually doesn't do anything either. But if on an economic, peaceful, and lawful level, people were to say, we've had enough of this nonsense.
Right,
it's gone far enough. If there was an awakening among the American public,
I would agree with
similar
you.
To what happened before the shooting started in 1776, you would see a change.
You always need a leader. And a matter of fact, you should have been with me. I was in the series having a cocktail, and all those guys were, what was it, the Tear Down Wall Street? Who were those guys, Manny? They were all over the country.
Occupy Wall Street.
Occupy Wall Street. So they're all out in front of the place doing their stuff. So me, Carl, I walk out, and I like everybody. I walk out, and I say, I said, who's your leader? I'd love to have him on the show. Well, we don't have a leader. Well,
yeah.
What do you mean you don't have a leader? We don't have a leader. We don't believe in it. And I said, you think the African-American movement would have been better off without Martin Luther King? I think not. I mean, you
had the same sort of experience I did when I went and talked to those guys over in Pensacola. They had a camp over there for a while.
And I said to the guy, do you think the U.S. would be here without George Washington? I mean, come on. a leader is, like, really important. Oh, no, we don't believe so. And I go, well, that's why you've been out here for 3 months, and you can't even tell anybody why you're here. What the hell's the matter with you? I said to the guy. I shouldn't have, I know. Hey, I got a question for you. Can we shift gears for a second? I know there was an offhanded comment. It was on my Yahoo. I don't know if you ever watch I don't watch any of these daytime people, but Stephanie Ruhle, I mean, I know she's been on a bunch of stuff. I know her because she's incredibly attractive, okay? That's how I know her for all. And I know she does news, and she was on, I think she was on Fox or CNBC, whatever it was. And she alluded yesterday, evidently, in an offhanded comment that hit all the, you know, whatever, the real flash and burn 10 minutes, everybody looks at it, and nobody looks at it again. An offhanded comment is, what does Trump have on Lindsey Graham that all of a sudden he's gone from this massive critic to being basically a lapdog? And you know, it's funny, Carl, you're not into this as much as Wayne is, thank God, but Wayne was on, we first had him on a couple years ago, and we were talking a little bit about the Denny Hastert situation. And
right.
And he said, well, and it was odd to me because Newt left. Newt Gingrich became no longer speaker. And wasn't somebody either in there for a little while or had to leave because they, I don't know what they did. They were stooping somebody, whatever it was. So all of a sudden, this guy, Denny Hastert, lands into the speaker spot. And I'm thinking, the guy's from Illinois. I never even heard of the guy. How the hell did this guy land there? I mean, all of a sudden, he's like the speaker from nowhere. And I don't think anything more of it, you know. And all of a sudden, years later, all of a sudden, the guy's out, seemingly without a problem. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff happens, you know. I know he got the exit in his town and made him a lot of money from 355. And all of a sudden, the guy's got all this trouble. And I'm thinking, what the hell? Well, Wayne comes in, and he says, well, everybody, not everybody, because Wayne and his guys kind of dig. That's what they do. And he says, we knew there was a problem with this guy because, or we suspected, because they had all these junkets evidently to, you know, the people in Congress go here to see the place, there to see the place. Whenever there was one to the east, you know, Thailand or someplace where evidently young people are available for massage and whatever, and that's, you know, I never went to those places and I have no interest in that stuff, but he goes, every time there was one of those, he and another guy from California went. So there was always some suspicion that he was into something sort of kinky. That nobody knew what it was, but there was a suspicion. Now, and my thought was, if somebody put him in that job because they had something on him and could, quote, control him, Cal, who the hell are the theys? And if it's, I mean, I don't think it's the president because he outlasted a couple of those. I mean, who exactly are these theys? And is, does whatever, I have no idea what anybody could have on Lindsey Graham. I mean, even if you're gay today, I don't see what big of a deal that is. It's not like it's 20 years ago. So I'm not accusing him one way or the other. I have no idea. But how much of this is going on? Or does this go on? I mean,
it's absolutely going on. And it's, and I've been convinced for a very long time that nobody gets into high office in this country. And even some not so high offices. Okay. Sheriffs. You know, constitutional offices within your state that have tremendous amounts of power, even though a lot of it seems to be soft. Okay, I mean, the sheriff is the highest constitutionally elected office in most counties. Without there being some kind of backstory that somebody knows about and can use to control what they, you know, what they want. Now there are limits to that ability, you know, that coercion. But anyone that thinks that's not real and isn't part and parcel of American politics is flat out nuts. It absolutely is real, and it goes on all the time. And it's one of those things, it leads you to start questioning, okay, what do they got on Trump? Okay. And what do they got on, you know, on all these other people? What do they have on Pelosi? Then again,
who's the they?
Look at what happened with Feinstein. You know, she has a guy that's basically a Chinese spy on her staff for years, and absolutely nothing happens to her.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. And she's on what's the double secret committee where the Mike Quigley's on it too? Where you all the clandestine stuff? It's not your armed services where you vote budgets. It's the what's the committee where if there's a covert act somewhere you're told about it in double secret areas? It's a highest level committee. Is the intelligence committee, the House Intelligence Committee?
Yeah, I think it's the intelligence. Yeah, probably what you're referring to.
That's like the highest committee to be on, correct?
In theory, anyway. Yeah, I mean it's classification when you get into those levels gets very compartmentalized.
Well, because, I mean, isn't Feinstein basically the highest-ranking Democrat in all those committees?
Yeah, she is. And so that she had somebody, you know, on her staff, that, and then she tried to dismiss, he was just a driver. Nonsense.
Well, just a driver.
Basically ran her California office.
Just a driver hears a lot.
Well, yeah, but he was even better than that. Okay, as some of Seagal's characters have famously said, I also cook.
Yeah. Well, Mayor Daley told me one day, we were in the steam together, covered up, he goes, Clinton, he doesn't know what the hell, he goes, we're driving in his car, he starts asking me all these questions, and I go, hey, if you want me to talk about that stuff, why don't you have your guy pull over, we'll take a walk in the park, I don't know this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just... I mean, but I guess my question is, who are the theys? I mean, right now.
Well, I don't know, but you know what? They do exist. They are out there, and my guess is that it's a cabal that nobody wants to name, and it includes people both in government and industry. And a big part of why you have not seen any prosecutions within the medical field is probably linked there.
Well, Carol, that's what I'm saying. We're getting to this stage, and I don't know what the stage is. And, you know, to be perfectly blunt, I won't be here to see it probably, because this is probably a 40-year unfolding. When you talk about revolting, or for lack of a better term, pushing back against what you see wrong in like government, you're not really pushing against people in the House of Representatives and the Senate. You're pushing against your real fight is with the four big drug companies. Your real fight is with, you know, the four big airlines. Your real fight, it's almost like that fight one of these days is going to be direct, that the government is nothing but an intermediary. They're like a shield to these guys. That's why.
Oh, yeah. Well, you look at this thing with Purdue that just came out where they were talking about a literal snowstorm of prescriptions that were going to come out of their, you know, producing OxyContin. And yet these attorney generals are, oh, we're suing the company. Excuse me, where are the criminal charges?
Right. Yeah, they're not. I mean, I'm saying there's a disconnect. I mean, it's funny when Arthur Anderson went under and being in the under the SEC world. I mean, not so much PTI, we're just a brokerage firm. But when I was on the board of the SIBO, and I see what regulators did to people. When I say did to people, on one hand, Carl, it's if it's me at PTI, the regulators can't wait to come in and mess with you. They're just, you know, I mean, most of them are pretty good people, but a lot of them just, I mean, everybody's day in power is a day in power, right? But when you're at a high level, if you're Merrill Lynch, if you're Goldman Sachs, some of the stuff you would do on the trading floor, like there were rules on trades. If we came down, what's the market on this spread? And the crowd would go, you know, quarter, three eighths. And somebody, as competition became not for the trade necessarily, but who would regulate the least, the firm might say, well, we're going to pay a half. We're going to take half of it and we'll split the other half up with you guys. But if it's a 1,000-lot trade, we're talking about 1,000 times 12 bucks. We're talking about, you know, how much is that? I mean, it's a $12,000, $500 essentially stealing from the customer, which in virtually every state is a felony. Okay. If, and there's a 1% chance, if the regulators or the CBOE ever got wind of it, I mean, they're not going to spank Merrill Lynch when they're on the board, for God's sake. So if they get, quote, spanked, it'll be a $5,000 fine. Because the regulator gets between you and essentially the justice system, for lack of a better term. So when the accounting firms they have been adamant that they didn't want a regulator and fought against it for 80 years, after my tour on the board for 6 years, my thought was, these guys are blithering idiots. Because the regulator might be a pain in your ass a little bit, but they're really going to save your ass when you do something really bad and they get between you and the court, which is what they do. Yeah. They say this felony is not a felony. It's a rule violation here, and we'll fine you $2,000 without admitting or denying anything. In fact, they took home 12, and everybody's happy, right? So when Arthur Anderson went under for something somewhat picayune, that would have been a minor rules violation if they had a regulator. So once you get this regulator, you essentially you've got yourself a buffer. I mean, we're never going to be able to get at, as a citizen, for us to have to go through the Congress to get at the drug companies. I don't see how the hell we ever do that. I'm not so sure the combination of Washington, Martin Luther King, and Solomon can do that, Carl. I really don't. I mean, if you can tell me a way, please do.
Well, concerted economic action is the 900-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to any government entity. The problem is getting the people to get off their butt and actually do it. And by the way, in a tight labor market, it becomes impossible to try to enforce any kind of leverage back against somebody that does this. And you know, but again, one person doesn't mean, you know, it means nothing, all right? I mean, you know, I'm you know, so I'm a coder for some, you know, some company, and I get all bent out of shape about this, and I say, you know, F you, I'm not coming to work, and they hire somebody else.
Right.
What happens, though, when you've got 400 of those guys in the room and they all get up and walk out?
Well, you still need somebody to start it off.
And people say, oh, it'll never happen. Well, guess what? The fact that it never happens is why all of this jacking continues to go on.
Well, I don't disagree. Carl, thank you very much for helping us out this morning. As usual, great stuff. We'll have you back on before the end of the month, before your regular stuff. Take care of yourself. Have a good weekend. At least not going to snow by you. I assume you're down in
Florida. Oh, actually it is. I'm in northern Michigan right now.
Oh, good luck with that. All right, are you skiing?
Yes, and it is snowing right outside my window.
Well, go grab a little powder, buddy, and be careful. SP Futures up 12, Dow Futures up 154. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Matt Weber, and aboard with John Neal in a second. PTI West. SP Futures up 1225. Dow Futures up 153. We've been here pretty much all morning. NASDAQ Futures up 35. We're up like last night here, too, as well. So no real surprises, except for the bomb that we were going to lower the tariffs yesterday, and then all of a sudden the market loved that and still sorts of love it. It's interpreting it as some movement being made here, and yet then another administration official came out like, you know, right afterwards said, we're not going to do that. But so far nobody's believing that we're not going to do that part. You know, we'll see. It's all driven by this news stuff, unfortunately. DAX, however, really loves it. Up 211, it's almost 2%. FTSE up 117, 1.7. CAC line up 76, 1.6. So, that's the game this morning. Nikkei up 263, 1.3%. Shanghai up 36, 1.4. Hang Seng up 335, 1.3. So I'm going to say there must be something going on behind the scenes that makes it even better than the headlines are. Better in returns to these talks than the headlines are telling you. Oil up 56 cents, Brent up 60, natural gas down 16, 324, even though the weekend is supposed to be pretty darn cold, although maybe not as cold. RBOB 143, And home heating oil, 189. Gold, with, down 10 bucks now, as we don't really need. We don't need no stinking gold because everything's right with the world. Silver down 10 cents. Maddie, what do you got? What for us, traffic, weather, sports?
40 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Our earlier crashes on the north side, Lakeshore Drive inbound at Belmont and Kennedy inbound at Diversity are all clear, so that's good news. No significant remaining congestion from those two crashes either. We do have a new crash, though. Outbound Edens, just before Pratt Road, or Pratt Avenue, I should say, there's a crash in the left lane. That's causing some congestion. Montrose out to Lake Hook Road is now 22 minutes and building as congestion grows on the outbound Edens. It does not affect the junction yet at the Kennedy, but that could happen, so keep that in mind. Inbound sides look okay. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson, normal traffic volume. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Out in the western burbs, we have a crash. Roselle Road at Devon Avenue. That's out near Hanover Park. Just north of that, Barrington Road northbound at Mundhank Road, there is an accident. And in Naperville, it looks like there's a crash at Route 53 and Park Boulevard. But everything else is looking good out there. And no snow as of yet, but we're expecting our first significant snowstorm of the year in the Chicago area, expected to begin during the evening commute today, maybe around 5 o'clock or so, and then continue throughout the evening and overnight and into Saturday, with the worst parts of it coming on Saturday. Could be anywhere from 5 to 10 inches of accumulation, depending on where you are. So keep that in mind as well. But right now we're dry. We're 31 degrees and overcast, and that's where we'll remain all day long from a temperature standpoint till the snow arrives later on this evening. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 69. Right now it's mostly clear and 54. In sports, NBA basketball, Bulls were blown out by the Nuggets 135-105 in Denver. Suns lost a heartbreaker to Toronto 111-109. In hockey, Blackhawks lost to the Rangers 4-3. College hoops, Arizona State topped Oregon State 70-67. Arizona lost a tough home game to Oregon 59-54. Chief.
What do you make of your hero, Tom Ricketts, saying because they spent so much money last year on people that didn't even pitch for them, that they can't spend any money this year?
Well, that's the risk you take. I really he's really crying poor, which I find hard to believe, just because I was looking at spring training tickets, and spring training tickets for lawn seats are going for $50 a pop. So I don't know where, you know. I mean, the guy is doing is making money here, and he won't spend any. But yeah, he said he told Theo and the guys on the baseball side that if they were to spend these allocated dollars in the 2018 free agency, knowing what was available in the 2019, then they probably wouldn't have those funds available for the Bryce Harpers and Manny Machados. And Theo decided to spend that money anyway. And when you talk about Darvish and Chatwood, it didn't work.
Yet,
anyway. Chatwood was really weird because he was really good before they brought him in for the most part, and he just was horrible. Darvish was hurt. You can't really forecast that. So I still think both those guys could bounce back, but at least so far, 1 year into it, it hasn't worked. And now they appear to be in no position to sign Bryce Harper, which I'm surprised about because I really thought they were going to. But now it's pretty clear when Madden said they weren't and Epstein said they weren't and Ricketts said they weren't. I think that's clear now that they're not going to.
Okay, so here we go. John, how are you?
Doing good. Good morning, guys.
Just so you know, not that we should ever do things like this. You're not supposed to ever check the numbers. You're supposed to go along and listen to the people give you. I'm going to say I would go down to spring training, 83, 84, 85, watch the Cubbies, and in the various, we went down to Arizona. The spring games were probably closer than the away games were probably closer than to where you were staying and then Hulk and Park was.
Yeah, Mesa is a trek, as John can tell you.
Yeah, we
still. Right. It's the furthest one out, right?
Well, the Oakland used to be in, right in that stadium right by the zoo, the Phoenix Memorial, right? Or Municipal, wherever it was. It's a nice place.
Yeah.
And I think,
I've been to that spring training stadium.
I'm saying, the guys from, it wasn't the Dodgers, it was, Brewers or somebody, we were in Diablo Stadium, which was right in Tempe, right?
Yep. Yeah, right on the loop as you come in.
Yeah. But that was a place. If you found a guy that hit 30 home runs there, I think it was like 410 down the line, Matty. I mean, it was like, you know, a long way.
Yeah, so. But
there's no humidity in the air, and the ball travels.
Light air, yeah. I'm just saying.
It's light air. That's why the fences are deeper.
Yeah, but they're real deep. I mean, you look at the outfield, you go, oh, wow, what are the golf balls out there? Anyway, I'm going to say that I'm going to be charitable here with my calculator. If you went to Diablo Stadium, I remember that because we paid up. I think the first five rows was $350, and the rest of the seats were $250. This is in 1983. So I'm putting $4 in the U.S. basket of services in 1983 would be how much today based on CPI?
I'll say $10.
You know what? You know what, John? This Maddie's getting too good. 10-14.
Yep.
All right.
I never dreamed you'd be that close. So the inflation rate, the normal, the inflation, the real rate that we're getting from our government from 1983 to 2018 is how much?
It's about, what, 2.5 times, right?
Well, it's 153.45%.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to say that the price of medicine, homeowners, tuition, everything else is easily into the well over 1,000%. Easily. Plus automobiles got to be too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, automobiles aren't 1,000. I mean, I remember saying our car in 1983 cost $5,000, maybe.
Now
it's 30.
When I went to spring training 2 years ago, down in Phoenix, we went to a road game with the Cubs at the Oakland Stadium that you mentioned, and that was an older, you know, sort of rundown stadium compared to some of the new ones. And then we went to the new Cubs Stadium. It was the first year that they launched the new, you know, Ho-Ho Camp Park or whatever right. They call it. And the Oakland Stadium was certainly cheaper, although with the Cubs there, I feel like they maybe jacked up the prices that
probably,
day.
Probably.
And I want to say we got in for like $20, and the beers, not that we had any, but we did, were, you know, maybe $5 or something like that. At the Cubs Stadium, it was no different than Wrigley prices, Chief. The beers were $10, $9.50, whatever. The hot dogs were expensive. The seats were expensive. And it was no different than Wrigley prices, and the place was jammed, completely sold out.
That's why you go to all the away games here in spring training. You come over to my neck of the woods, you know, where the Padres and the Mariners are, and when they play them, you go to those games.
Yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable. And now it was a beautiful 80-degree day. It was very enjoyable Thursday afternoon or whatever it was when we were down there, but I couldn't believe that, one, that it was completely sold out, and two, that it was Wrigley Field prices for a meaningless spring training game where the starters, first of all, they only played like four starters, and then they only played them two innings. And so then you had a bunch of guys wearing like number 83, who you've never seen or heard from since.
In 1983, I was in pretty good shape in those days. The old Hohokam Park was set in this beautiful area, and they had, I'm going to say, Jan, correct me if I'm wrong, 2, 3, 4 soccer fields around there they essentially parked on.
It's still the same area. I think it's the same complex.
No, I don't think. I think they moved further.
I think it's the exact same. I think they own that piece of land.
Well, right down the block was Fitchfield, where the minor leaguers played. You could almost walk down there. I think
that all is still there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you had all these soccer fields, and I would go there in the morning, and I would do my 120-yard sprints, to go back to the motel, which was a mile away, shower up, have some breakfast, and I'd go out to the game. There was never anybody there. I mean, I'm talking 9 o'clock. Well, 5 years later, I go out there at 9 o'clock, and the guy goes, he wants me to pay to park. And I go, what are you talking about? I'm going to run. And he goes, run? No, nobody does that here anymore. They're idiots piling into the game. We're talking about the desert sun coming from the Midwest, all tidy-whitey guys. And they're already going into the game at like 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, so then Jim Fry was still there, and he goes, I don't understand the baseball. He goes, people love baseball. He goes, take today, for instance. He goes, this is going to be a crummy game. We got two minor league pitchers going. All I got to do is walk everybody. Get the places jammed. You're right, man. I mean, it's
a fun vacation.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it is.
To go down there when it's 80 degrees in March and you're leaving 30 degrees behind.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you don't give a rat's ass about the outcome of the game, obviously, because it doesn't matter. You're literally just there to drink and eat hot dogs in the sun and look at the girls. I totally get that. There's nothing wrong with that. But the fact that they can get away with Major League Baseball, you know, prices at a spring training game, it blows my mind, but it was sold out, and I was part of it, so I guess I contributed to it.
Did you ever go to the Scottsdale Stadium, the ones right in downtown Scottsdale, that old place?
I've seen it. John's probably been there.
Well, yeah. Dr. J and I go to a game there. It's had to be 1984 or so.
That's where the Giants play, right?
Yeah, yeah. They've been there forever. And I don't know where they're other fields are for like minor leaguers. It's just that field down there. I mean, it's where the Cubs got all their minor leaguers over at Fitch Field. And if you want to get a guy at bat in the seventh inning, he like walks down the block, you know, type of thing. So you were pretty close. So we get down there, and the guy goes, "There's no more seats. How about sitting on the field?" And I go, "Say what?" He goes, "Yeah." So you know, the bullpens were just like they were at Old Wrigley, you know, on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. J and I, with about 15 other guys, were sitting on the grass in the bullpen. I mean, can you imagine them like letting you on the field today?
No, God, no.
And so we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, this guy, we hear a phone ring, and this guy gets up. "Hey, you guys mind moving over? I got to warm up." Okay, so we move over like 3 feet, and the guy's pitching like over our head. Can you imagine that today?
No.
We're right in the line of fire. There was like 15 of us out there sitting on the grass. It was pretty neat.
I think that's awesome. Yeah. That would never happen today.
Oh, God, no. Anyway, so, John, we're still a message driven from Washington. Our goal is to stop going up, which is kind of a pain. But we have every little hint. We got guys coming from China. We got guys going over there. We run up 3 days in a row, and then all of a sudden it backs off, and we come back. We're pushing half to two-thirds of our way back on the sell-off. We're getting near a Fibonacci point, which I'm not much of a big Fibonacci fan, but one of these days we're going to have to fish or cut bait. Are we going to continue to go right up like it never happened, or are we turning back the other way? I'm a toss-up on this, Jen. I don't know.
Well, I'm a toss-up too, but as you point out, you know, looking at the technicals, you are reaching a resistance point, a short-term resistance. And I kind of think it's going to go through it, and then, you know, the next resistance is going to be, you know, more of the issue. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you could flip a coin. I mean, because the you can't put any fundamentals into this or anything like that, and that's the frustrating part. We at least could, you know, trade on some fundamentals if there were some, other than this aberration, you know, that we're having out there.
Well, you look at some of the I look around, I might because all of a sudden now I'm starting to put a lot of people in the protected index program. Never thought I would 6 months ago, Jan, but I'm kind of looking fairly seriously at this QQQ. I mean, I'm gonna
yeah, I can see that.
I'm gonna kick it around with you guys some more. I mean, because if you guys, I mean, you and Dan and other people think it's not a good idea, I mean, we try and do a, you know, at PTI we try and at least all be comfortable with the indices, and for a long time I would have put one in there if it was, you know, my last nickel. But now all of a sudden, since some of the fangs have come back a little bit, I don't think it's as concentrated as it once was. I mean, I don't see, I mean, if you have individual stocks, and I've been looking at a lot of portfolios on the last week or two, they have a lot of Apple in there. I mean, God, talk about, you know, some wounds. But I mean, I honestly don't see this Apple going to 230 anytime soon from this 155. I don't see Amazon going back to 2,100 from 1,600. I mean, it's bounced back from the 14 pretty dramatically into the 16s, but it's a ways from 21. I mean, I don't know that those guys go back and get that top slot again. I mean, I'd be really surprised if by the end of the year Apple's back at 220. I mean, I've been surprised before, and it's going to happen again. But I think they're a ways away. That's another 50%, for God's sake, Jan. I mean, you know.
No, I think there's some others, you know, big names in technology like a Microsoft that's going to lead, that's my personal opinion, but that a Microsoft, something like that's going to lead.
Well, what do you make of a Goldman Sachs that absolutely got its ass kicked for the whole year? Now they came out with some earnings that were pretty good, and we've had this huge bounce back where if you look from the low, you'd say, God, I should have made that trade. But then you look from where they were, and they're still down 40%. I mean, there's another one. I don't know if they turn into a Dow leader this year. I mean, I think they're probably stopping going down and maybe are going to do something. But those four stocks, I really don't see them, you know, jumping back to old highs. I mean, I guess I could be wrong and be happy, but you know, I don't know. I just didn't see it.
Right. The large banks have been somewhat of a disappointment, as we've talked about before. You know, to pick these ones individually, you know, who the heck knows? I've owned a little bit, and I use the word a little bit of, you know, the XLF, and I've been able to protect it. It doesn't have the greatest derivatives to protect it, but I've been able to protect it a little bit. But by using the technicals, kind of playing those around it with the technicals and things like that.
Well, that's one I actually have a little spread out in there, which is the wrong strike, of course. I have the 24. Right. I have the 24 puts, but I don't put a nickel. And I got another week. Who knows? By next Friday, I think it'd be 24.
That's exactly it. And that's why this has been hard. These things can change on a dime. Although this last week, we've kind of just had a nice, even, steady move, which has been nice.
Well, what John was saying about the XLF, and I'll expand on it a little bit. John, if I'm wrong, kick me. If you buy that, and it's been one of my somewhat favorites for the protected program too, but the issue you have is if it's under 25 or around 25, you can buy the puts, so you can protect yourself okay. The calls are sort of hard to deal with. When it gets up to 25, 26, you can deal with the calls a lot easier, and you can start selling the 27s and 26.5s. And even if you get something for them, and you do it every couple of weeks, you can pay for the puts, which is what is the goal of our protected index program. But under 24, I've always found, or under 25, I never really found, and JD's always miffed at me, the guy who actually does the trading on a day-to-day basis for me, is there's nothing to sell in here. If we could get that thing up to, these banks to where the thing is, 28.5, 29, where we could start selling the 30s, it'd be a hell of a lot better product. And it just never gets there.
Right.
So, under 25, we're always struggling to sell something. And I suspect that's what you were alluding to.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's been just like you're saying, and Jim, it's been, sporadic, especially at the call side, right?
Yeah. And even the XLE, as much as we've had that for a while and we've made, the thing's been all over the place, and even though it's down since we bought it, we probably have managed to hang in there because we've been able to scalp the put side. But the mm-hmm. call side, every time it runs up, the vol goes straight down. So, it's like nobody expects the thing to go to 75. So when it gets to 69 or 69.5 or 68.5, the 70 calls are like 2 cents. Nobody thinks it's going any higher than that. So, yes, you can do all the covered rights you want. That's a different one. You can do the covered rights you want lower, but when it goes up and you say, boy, I'd love to be able to sell a 72s. And by the way, if it gets taken away at 72, thank you very much. But when it gets up to 70, the 72s are like 3 cents. So, trying to do your trading in these areas is not as easy. That's probably why I think maybe if you do one of these programs, you need a professional to help you.
You're right, because as you're pointing out, Tom, it's evolving and changing as we're talking. And a lot of people have almost kind of like this engineer's mind. They want to stick with something, and it's okay. X happens, you do Y, blah, 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 blah. And the problem is this is constantly evolving, and, what worked this month might not work next month. We move on to something else.
I mean, the difference, and this is a shameless plug for people here at PTI, and I don't do this very often, but what the difference between most retail traders, there might be a retail trader out there who spent 18 years on the trading floor, but there aren't too many. You look at a position and you put on it and you look at it, it's like the hockey stick. Okay, if I buy this and I sell this call, this is, if everything works out right, I'm going to make this and blah, blah. If it goes up here, I get a sign. Well, like John says, the minute you put it on, it's not a static position. It's alive. And the people, and the people that are have done it their whole life, like us, are, if the stock runs up, instead of just having your stock called away, we might be able to, most of the time, not all the time, be able to roll up that call to the next one. So instead of losing the stock, we can ride the thing up. But at least there's a lot of, we're thinking one trade ahead, which most retail people don't. They think of just the trade they have.
That's exactly it, right?
For my first day in the trading pitch, Jan, I bought a 10 lot. I was in Chesapeake? I don't know, some crummy old thing. And I bought a 5 lot. And all I could think about was, and I paid like a buck and an eighth for it, all I could think about was selling this 5 lot at a buck and a quarter.
Right.
But it took a while to where, so what, if I sold the option under it on the offer at 6.25 versus 6.8, it was the same thing. So as I got better at it, I realized I don't have to sell the one I just bought. As long as I sell something, and then I learn how many other things to sell. So it's a totally different mindset. You look at every position like it's alive, like it's a living, breathing thing, where retail people don't. That's why if you're going to be in these positions that call for, quote, the second trade, not just the first trade, you need help from people that do it a lot and have been doing a lot for a long time. Is that a fair statement, John?
Without a question. Like I said, there's so many moving pieces to this, and I wholeheartedly agree, Tom.
And since the markets are becoming narrower and narrower in terms of people putting markets out there, I think it's more and more important to have somebody helping you out. Anyway, SP Futures, we're now up 13.75. Looks like a bullish day, unless something comes out the other way on China. I guess we're up today. No show on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, so no markets. We'll be back on Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.